right. I was really wanting to. I'm trying not to talk during the music, but I really wanted to. You know what I found out yesterday?
What's that?
You probably already know this. Are you as big of a Back to the Future fan as we are?
Totally. Okay. It owns me. Yeah.
You know when Marty's going up to the mall?
Right. What's the name of the mall?
Well, that's where I'm going. Okay. Are you already know
no,
this?
No, I don't know.
Okay, so the first time in the movie, you know, he wakes up and in the middle of the night.
Right.
Which is a little odd.
Yeah.
I mean, your kid's slipping off to meet with an old man in the middle of the night. You know, it's fine.
And let's not discount too that Marty lied to Doc. He's like, "Are you asleep?"
Yeah.
He's like, No, I'm up.
Anyway. I'm up. Yeah. So he pulls up to the mall on his skateboard. Which, by the way, that was a piece of crap skateboard. They made it out like it was this awesome skateboard.
Right. But yeah.
I know skateboards. That was a piece of junk.
It was a Kmart.
Yeah. So he's riding up to the mall, and if you look at the sign, it says Twin Pines Mall.
Right. Right.
You know where I'm going?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, towards the end of the movie, he's trying to come back to save Doc from getting shot by these terrorists.
Right. Mm-hmm. The Libyans.
The Libyans. I'll draw their fire. Anyway, he comes down on the skateboard and it says Lone Pine Mall. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh. I've seen that movie. You know why?
Yeah.
Because he runs over the guy's, was it Peabody?
Yeah.
Old man Peabody or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. He runs over it and he shoots
them.
And he blows up the mailbox. He runs over the pine. Yeah. Well, it's only one pine tree.
Yeah. I never knew that.
Yep. There you go, folks. Episode 2, Back to the Future trivia.
Little Easter egg there.
That's crazy.
That's right.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Here we are.
That's right.
Let's do it.
So today, this is kind of a heavy one. We've warned. We let everybody kind of know this is going to be kind of heavy.
It could be, but in
a good way.
Yeah.
So don't click off. Right. I was going to say turn that dial, but there's no dial to turn anymore.
Right. Don't hit stop.
Don't hit stop. Yeah.
Push
So we were going to talk today about worry, fear, anxiety. You guys have had a tough year, and you've had a tough few years.
That's dealing right. with yeah, that's one way to put it.
With,
yeah.
Yeah. Dealing with a friend dying and then you dealing, Keith dealing with a cancer scare this past year.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, the three of us have talked a lot off of the podcast about walking through anxiety and fear, walking through grief, and sort of how to deal with that in a healthy way, you know. We just thought it would be good just to sit down and just have a conversation about those things. You know, cancer is such a, you know, it's one of those things in our world that's like now modern medicine, almost everything you go to the doctor, you get find out you got something wrong with you. You know, they have something to overcome it. And that's just one of those things that, you know, you hear that word and your heart just sinks, you know.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good one. I felt like it was just weighty all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm going to go, can I just tell you, whenever I'm going to go do something, like if I'm going to go, when it's ministry related, there's always this feeling of, you know, this is dumb. You shouldn't be doing this. Like, you're not qualified to do this. Why aren't y'all, you know, I was kind of dealing with that today a little bit.
Right.
So you always know that's a warfare thing. We talk a lot about that, about, you know, there is warfare. We do have we do have an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
We have a savior. We have an enemy. And they are both, you know, at work.
Yeah.
And thankfully, Jesus is just as much at work as the enemy is. But so I think today's going to be good, even though it is a heavy thing. So I'm going to start. You know, I just want to Stephen, want to start with you. But first of all, welcome to the podcast, everybody.
Oh, glad to be here.
I mean, you know, I'm being all rude and everything. Saints Party. Saints and Pioneers. I forgot the name already, Keith. So we have Stephen with us. So Stephen Shirley is a close friend of mine and Keith's. He's going to be on here as much as we can get him out here. He's a busy guy, but we've had so many conversations, and it's like almost all of those conversations could be podcasts. Now, some of them we'd have to edit heavily. Yeah.
Very true.
But all of them could be a podcast.
It's not like your mama's podcast.
It's not your mama's podcast. That's for
right.
sure.
That's right.
But so wanted to kind of start with Stephen. You had a friend,
mm-hmm.
Marshall, what's his last name?
Marshall Morris.
Marshall Morris.
Coolest dude you'd ever know.
That passed away.
Mm-hmm.
2019,
actually.
2019.
May 25th, 2019.
Okay. And he passed away of?
Colon cancer.
Right.
Passed away from colon cancer. Yep.
So, you know, obviously the three of us, you know, walking through that together, mm-hmm. we didn't know Marshall. Marshall was, how long were y'all friends?
Oh, man. I mean, we were friends. I met that guy about 7th, 8th grade. Back when we all played outside in the backyard playing tackle football, he was great athlete. Everybody was like, who are these kids kind of running the neighborhood?
Yeah.
And everybody was kind of scared of this guy, and he ends up kind of walking up, I'll never forget it, in a, San Francisco Giants. What's that guy's? Will Clark.
Will Clark. Yeah.
Will Clark Will the had a huge outfit, because this guy was kind of one of those dudes that we're all friends with. It's just kind of got his act together. He had a duffel bag, everything matched. It was like, who is this? This dude's cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And we just became good friends in high school. We, you know, that kind of friend that you can joke and have little inside jokes with, and that kind of friend where you're on the phone with them and other people know you're talking to them. Mm. You know, my wife Amy would always be like, you're talking to Marshall, aren't you? You know, because y'all ain't making no sense. You sound goofy.
You get the eye roll.
We could change voices. You know, it was one of those friends you could kind of manipulate your voice with, and people you know, thought you were nuts. But when you're talking to him, it was like, you know, he would play off of it and, you know, act ridiculous. So it was just that kind of connection, a good friend. And I mean, over 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you guys, I mean, it was probably a year that he struggled with this before he passed away?
He actually, had gotten recently, engaged, and he was married, and I think it was in, because we used to give him some crap about it. I was like, man, you're getting married around Valentine's Day. Come on.
Yeah.
But I think it was around then, maybe in late January, and then I think in, I think it was late February is when he said, man, you know, I got a weird diagnosis, and we got to go check it out. And that's kind of when things kind of started going from there.
Actually, that's kind of genius to get married on Valentine's Day, because you can kind of knock out the two gifts at once.
Right. Yeah. And knowing him, because we messed with him about it, he changed the date.
Yeah.
Because we were kind of ruthless about that kind of stuff. But like, and I joke all aside, but so he was kind of coming into a new phase of life, and it was, you know, it was interesting. He got that kind of happened. And at the same time, I was, you know, he worked in the financial industry and I did too. And it was a weird coincidence that I got, you know, and I kind of look at it as a kind of a spiritual cool thing that happened is I was able to be one level below him in the bank building where we were working for when he got that diagnosis. And so we were able to kind of play off each other and even joke as friends for that several months when all this was going on.
Yeah.
So, it was tough, man.
Yeah.
Tough news, but at the same time, it was surreal. I think he could probably speak to that when you encounter something so heavy, you really, you don't know which direction to go in with your life. You kind of, and I'll be honest, I didn't handle it very well. I checked out a little bit when I got the news. I remember, you know, even, and I feel bad looking back, you know, throughout that year is, you know, he'd have a certain milestone that would come up because even in, you know, at some point we thought the cancer was gone. I think it was in late December and, it returned, and I remember calling him and making a stupid joke, you know, on the phone. And I remember he didn't joke back like he used to, you know. So there was that kind of, okay, there's a reality here that I'm encountering that is bigger than me, you know. And I remember feeling very inept on how to deal with it, you know. And I think Keith could probably see how what that's like when you get that kind of news, you know. You don't know really what direction your brain kind of goes on autopilot.
When you heard him say, "This is cancer," like, what was that like? Well, I mean, just
honestly, was the type of kind of, you know, people say that those things happen, it's a gut punch type thing. And for me, it wasn't that. It was, that's not,
surely not.
There's, you know, there's, you know, something's wrong. The dude even told me, he's like, "Man, I'm in the best shape of my life. I mean, I don't really know, but they say I got a knot here. I need to go get it checked out." And they, you know, that news came back. It's like, they do think it's cancer. And I think, you know, what happened is when I got that news, you know, I do remember being in the bank and going into the stairwell. It was downtown at the Daniel Building down here. And I stepped into the stairwell and I said, "You know, is this for real?" And I distinctly heard, you know, your buddy, he's not going to be around next year, you know. And I don't like to say those kind of things lightly, but it was something that I can say I audibly heard, and I didn't like it, and I kind of dismissed it, you know. But I'm not saying that I was given some revelation there in any way, but I'm saying that it was I feel like I entered into a little spiritual realm there of like, whoa, this is a real life stuff here, and like, I don't really know what to do with it. So I could just say I was confusion and pretending like it wasn't happening. I mean, in a lot of ways, but also realize, you know, how all those things happen at once.
Right.
You know, that's what it was. It was one of those encounters where it's like, I'm getting fire hosed in every direction here. I don't know what it's, what to do with it. So,
yeah, man, that's incredible. Well, I remember, you know, the three of us kind of, you know, talking through this and stuff. And I just remember feeling, you know, when you have a friend that has a loved one that you don't know, or has a friend that you don't know who's struggling or about to pass away or something, and you see the anguish in your friend for that other person, and it's like you feel bad for your friend, but at the same time, it's like, it's a different thing than if you're both grieving or walking through some hardship related to somebody that you both know. And I just remember you made the comment, we were sitting out by your fire pit, and you made the comment of feeling isolated. Because, you know, he was kind of like this friend from this other world, and then you had all these other friends over here, and it was like, and I just remember thinking, man, I didn't realize that, you know, I mean, I should have realized that, but I didn't take that into account. It's like, that must be very isolating, because it's like, you know, you had these friends that were, you guys are still friends, but you're not like kids in the neighborhood riding bikes together. You are all living separate lives, and it's like, I don't know, just the feeling of just seeing that in you, struggling by yourself, you know, maybe you can kind of.
Oh yeah, I mean, I could definitely, I could identify with that. Anytime you get those, especially the kind of news where it's, you know, I'm 39, my buddy's 40, you know, so I'm gonna have to deal with this, or so this is, you know, the cards I've been kind of dealt, and nobody else can really understand until they. No, those kind of feelings definitely crept in, and it was, you know, oh, well, he's the guy whose best friend's got cancer. I mean, you know, yeah. That was the, and it sounds brash, but that was how it, you know, you didn't want to be the person bringing that up, you yeah, know, yeah. And that kind of work. It's funny how it's ridiculous, but that's how it works against you is, right. You know, pushing you away when really it's important to be talking about it from what I've learned from absolutely. Some of the grief stuff that I've been dealing with.
You and know? You need to know on our end, like we, you know, we always want to be the kind of friends for each other where it's like, no matter how long somebody's struggling or grieving or whatever, it's like, it's never out of bounds or yeah. off mm-hmm. limits to talk about something, like to bring something up. And you need friends like that. You need friends. It's like, man, I'm still struggling with this. I'm still grieving. I'm still locked into this, you know? And, yeah. And,
I want to say, I think if I remember right, I got to meet Marshall twice. I know I did once. Mm-hmm. It was a Mexican restaurant that is no longer with us.
That's correct.
On Highway 280. It was very good. Mm-hmm. What was the name?
Is it the one Superior. With the elephant foot mug?
No.
It would be Superior.
Superior Grill. Mm-hmm. Superior Grill. And Jesse is referring to an elephant foot mug full of
that
Coke
is at another
soda, whatever you...
root beer.
Baptist drink out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was Superior Grill. I think it was a birthday.
Yeah, it was my birthday.
Yeah.
He's always kind of around those things.
And I want to tell you, like, what struck me, you know, and I don't remember where that was at on the diagnosis or time frame, but I remember even before the diagnosis, hearing about Marshall, you know, mm-hmm. talking with you and you talking about him. And I remember what struck me was, you know, getting to meet him, already having known you, but watching you two interact and thinking what a good friend you both were, you know, to mm-hmm. each other. And so I think for me, you know, I know meeting him in that way and seeing how you guys interact, I think I maybe had a different glimpse into when you would talk about the struggle or the hurt. I was like, man, I've got friends like that in my life too.
And right.
I count you two guys one of those. But just seeing how close y'all were and just knowing that, man, this is, you know, from my perspective, and you had kind of shared, like, man, it's not looking good. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, feeling that hurt and that weight for you of like, man, what's this loss, you know, going to be? Because it looked like, you know, unless there was some miracle that mm-hmm. it was going that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I just want to say, man, you did a great job in walking through that with him. I know in those situations, it's always something where we question, man, could I have done more or could I have done this or what? But I just want to acknowledge, man, you were a great friend and brother till the very end. I know that. And so,
speaking of that,
yeah,
you got to share the Dave Matthews story.
Yeah, it was one of the things that we shared as friends is we were huge on going to live events, concerts, comedians. We got to see some of the best. We got to see Chappelle at the Stardome. We got to see Mitch Hedberg at the Stardome. I mean, we saw all the kind of like great people, but Dave Matthews for us. And I know he gets a bad rap sometimes from a lot of people, and which is, you know, I'll redeem that when I finish the story. But like we followed the guy, not followed, we went in groupies, but we would go to shows in Atlanta. And that was anytime we got tickets, Marshall was in the fan club. I think it's called the Warehouse Fan Club. But he would get awesome tickets. We'd always kind of, when he came to Pelham, in Oak Mountain specifically, we'd make sure we got tickets and we were kind of out there getting ready for the show is what I'd say. Mm. Anyway.
Right on.
yeah. Having some root beers. When it was kind of, when we got the news that it was, you know, I think it was in April, it was, hey, man, I've got like 4 to 6 weeks left to live, you know? And he's like, what am I supposed to do with this kind of news? And me too, you know? I mean, I get in the news at the Taco Bell drive-in, you know, and like going, do what? Mm-hmm. You know, so long story short, what we did is we came up to the concert. I started thinking, you know, is he even going to go to this? Because I don't know if he should go, because it's, you know, dude's not really feeling like it. He probably, you know, but from what the news and his sister was telling me and some other friends, or he's like, dude says he was going to go, you know? And I can remember even seeing him a week before. I was like, hey, man, you ain't got to feel obligated to go to this. I mean, you know, he's like, it was kind of that weird acknowledgement, like, hey,
he was
man.
In a wheelchair at that point, wasn't
not
he?
Yet, but he by that time he did. He was going to be needing a wheelchair. And so I kind of went to a little rally on that day of like, I'm going to see if I'm going, if I can hit this, hit, somehow reach out to somebody and see if we can just get at least maybe some better seats. It's kind of what my goal was. But like from a lot of Facebook messages to just friends that I have and that sort of thing, before I knew it, we had gotten a call in the parking lot, and it was from a friend of a friend that had seen a Facebook post that was communicated from that, hey, this was legit. They said, hey, Dave said he wants to meet with old Marshall before if he can make it. Yeah. We were like, whoa.
That's incredible.
You know, so we what's crazy is we called called him up and was like, hey, man, I'm not trying to rush you here, but if you can hurry up, you can meet this guy. Yeah. You know, he said he's down with it. And, you know, it's almost like I feel bad looking back on it because it was like, man, we got to make this happen because this is all, you know, and it, in a weird way, it was for me. I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, it was also I knew that he deserved to experience something great.
Yeah.
You know, he deserved to see that. And if I, by God, if I can make it happen, I was going to do it. Yeah. So, you know, ends up he gets to the show. And, man, the coolest thing I think that it was kind of a testament to everybody kind of rallying around him and everything was – you know, he couldn't make it, so Dave was like, all right, well, I'll meet him after the show. If he's gonna be here. Like, he was like, man, he keeps bumming up. Like, this is gonna happen.
Yeah.
And we get to the concert and we get to actually go in before everybody else. And Marshall, I think, was kind of embarrassed about it because it's like, and I could see that, you know, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm the guy in front, but I can remember just the kind of almost like, I hate to be biblical here on a podcast about Jesus here, but it was the Red Sea kind of parted kind of thing, split open. And I'll never forget, there's a guy with us that we hung out with that, you know, he's kind of ran with us a lot on different occasions. And he said, man, I ain't ever had anybody do something like this for me before.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, you know, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, what crazy thing is, we get there, Marshall has to leave within a couple minutes because he felt terrible. And now I realize now that's the kind of guy he was. He was showing up because everybody wanted him to be there. He loved a good party. He loved, you know, that fun. And the cool thing is, he didn't make it. Well, Dave ends up calling him 2 weeks later. And if anybody ever wants to push me, I got the video of, you know, Marshall on the couch, sitting there talking to Dave. And, you know, to me, I'll always say that that's the coolest thing I've ever heard because he sat there and talked to him about what was his favorite songs.
Yeah.
Just why he called him. And he said, man, honestly, I couldn't get the dude to shut up.
Yeah. Like, I remember you telling me he was kind of rambling a little bit.
He was kind of rambling a little bit. And he's like, but I was rambling too. He's like, we were all, you know, kind of excited. And he's like, but it was just one of those things where I'm like, you know, that was kind of one of those cool things from social media. And also just, I think it was really more, and I hate to sound like a goober here, but just that power of love of like, when somebody has an impact like that in your life, they deserve, I don't know, when the shoes are kind of flipped around, you are able to, when you do something for somebody, you want to see it. It's big, and that's, you know, I love that whole thing. It's awesome. Yeah,
man.
It's an awesome story.
That's incredible.
So don't ever crap on Dave Matthews if you you can if you don't like his music, but the guy's a good dude.
Well, I would like to point out, it was 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There would be a lot of people out there that would go, it's 2 weeks.
Still remembered it.
And he still remembered it.
He still remembered it, called him, and, you know, it's like,
what a guy.
What a guy. Yeah.
There you go. And by the way, just for those listening to the second unrelated, but still Back to the Future reference, Power of Love, he said.
Yeah.
Yes. So, right. Anyway, I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
Couldn't help myself.
We can go, I mean, we can go Teen Wolf. We can go a lot of Michael J. Fox references.
Yeah. Marshall's. Yeah.
He was a huge fan of. Can you tell the Teen Wolf? Yeah, I will tell the story. I remember he told me his first interview, you know, these kind of conversations we have, because dude was a brilliant guy. He was number one in his class in like financial, like analytics. I know I got the degree wrong, but we never knew that till after he actually passed away, that he was one of the top in his class in this, like, quantitative finance is what it was. It was something like incredible, but
I don't even know what that means.
I really don't either. Same. I'm just kind of spitting it back out to you. But what he did is that was so great is, he went in for this interview and, he's like, "Hey man, let me tell you about this." He goes, "This is what you don't do in an interview. And, for next time." And he goes, "When they throw in you the softball questions of like," he goes, "the guy says to me, 'What's your favorite movie?' What really inspired like Rocky's mind? Like, you know, like, so can you give me an example? What's yours?" And Marshall goes, "Teen Wolf, actually." And you know, instead of, you know, I'll give it to the guy. I think the guy did say part one or part two.
Definitely part one.
Definitely going to be part one. Sorry, yeah. Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
But anyway, he said, "Well, what part?" And he goes, "Well, I mean, you know, at the end when he has to shoot the foul shot and he has to be himself, you know, so just be yourself," is kind of the
good
tip.
Save.
Good save there. But he's like, I was like, "Did you get an offer?" He's like, "No, no job offer whatsoever." So anyway, he was just that type of, you know, hilarious, had a good outlook and laugh at stuff, and which we all is important as a dude friend, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, I will say, dude, you know, like Keith said it, and I won't, you know, rehash all that, but watching you love this dude the way you did, and what, you know, man, like, and I love the fact, you know, I know you come, I know you're tired of hearing me talk about Marshall, but dude, there's a weird comfort that I find when I have a friend that whenever I get with them, they can just spill their guts to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know there's going to come a time where I need to do that.
Right.
And the fact that, you know, you walked through that grief very slowly in a good way, mm-hmm. you know, and
still going through it, I'd say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure. And because there's a lot of people that's just like, "Man, get over it, move on," mm-hmm. you know. And I remember I had a friend who passed away. It was a guy that was a kind of a mentor of mine years ago. And a mutual friend of mine and his was really struggling with it. And I remember another guy told him, like, "Man, you know, you need to get over this. You need mm-hmm. to get over this." And I just remember how it hurt that guy, mm-hmm. like, saying that. Like, yeah. And I just remember that moment. I was like, "That is so unhelpful to say mm-hmm. to somebody."
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that is just the worst thing
you could
possibly just say to somebody. And man, if you're walking through grief and you don't have brothers that you mm-hmm. can sit down with and you can just sloppy cry with, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to find friends like that, man.
You got to find friends like that, and you got to find, I mean, you need to also talk about it with some other folks too, you know, like, I mean,
counselor.
Yeah. I mean, what I actually, and I'd always recommend it, you've probably seen it on a church sign a million times. It says Grief Share. It's a great program where, you know, people that have gone through some recent, you know, issue, you know, grief issues, and it's got people from all walks of really society, especially just with, you know, way cancer is, it gets in so many areas, and it really was beneficial for me to get it in there. And just, you know, I had a guy say, you know, when I told my story, he said, "I didn't have a friend like that." And I remember that really kind of reminded me, like, hey man, you know, there's a different way to be looking at this, you know. Hey, you had loss, and it really hurts, but at the same time, like, not you need to be grateful. You know, so I think sometimes we hear, mm-hmm. hear is like, you need to turn that around, turn that frown upside down type thing. And that just ain't how it is.
Yeah.
But you need to know, like, there's a different way to look at it that can really, I can remember that was my first step towards, you know what? He's right. Mm-hmm. I did have a great friend, and, you know, I need to be, not be ashamed of that and be able to tell other people, hey, ain't nothing wrong with being upset when your friend's upset.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you need to be able to understand that a great friend is a great friend because of who they are and how, you know, it's the impact they've had on your life. And when I was able to share that just briefly, and for here another older man, you know, that was way beyond me in years, say, I didn't have a friend like that. I just never forget that really was the beginning for me. Was like, I don't know, just the fog kind of started coming off my the windshield there a little bit for me.
Really?
Definitely. And I think it's what I'm trying to say is it's not only things like grief share and those kind of things, but being plugged in with your buddies, and it's a it's just such a heavy thing that there's no way you can figure it out all by yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Keith.
Yes, sir.
You've had a year.
It's been a year, for sure.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So you had how long was you, when were you diagnosed?
Diagnosed April the 11th
with colon cancer.
Yep, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, and this is my health PSA for a second because
I was gonna say, you're a healthy guy.
Yeah,
you're a good looking dude. I can tell you that you're very handsome.
Yeah, my mom says so. that's probably the only person, but I appreciate it. The health part of it. In fact, Steven and I were talking just earlier that, you know, I didn't even get to this point, but, you know, a few years back, I'd gotten, I think Jesse referenced Chubby Keith last week. And, you know, something about Chubby Keith and Cheetos, but had gotten health, you know, back in order.
Which, by the way, I had a Facebook memory and you were in it.
Oh, yeah. Chubby Keith.
Wow.
Way chubby. Yeah.
You were pretty chubby.
Yeah. Yeah,
you gotta be proud of yourself.
The one with Cheetos all over his face.
Yeah, I always said you guys never said anything about it either. You just let me walk around looking like I'd stumbled into a hive of bees.
We're dudes. We don't know.
You know what's funny is when I think of you back then, mm-hmm. I don't think of you as chubby.
Yeah.
When you're in the moment with somebody, unless they're just obese,
right?
You know,
I never will forget the first time you know, we had not seen each other in a little while when I started losing weight. And you was like, I just don't know how to feel about this. But I'd gotten my health back in order, was getting to the point of, you know, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and, you know, took the natural route, diet and exercise, got that under control. And even that, you know, looking, you know, back on this kind of the elevated view and looking back of just seeing the goodness of God of placing that desire within me to do that because of what I was going to face down the road. You know, you begin to think when you go through something like this, all the providential things that happen and you're like early detection and all this stuff. But even getting the health in order so that recovery wouldn't have been nearly as bad or rough on my body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was April 11th. So, I mean, we're sitting here recording today, August 7th. So, I mean, it's still, you know, fairly fresh and, you know, in this year. Mm-hmm. But the health PSA I'll give is if you're someone out there that is approaching the age of 45, do not wait because I'm convinced that God used, you know, the early detection to honestly not overstating. I mean, doctors backing this up, you know, to save my life.
Yeah.
You know, even to the point of the providential things of God of I had a doctor for a little while, was looking for somewhere closer to where I live. Wasn't in a huge rush because I just, you know, wasn't really sick any times. Been blessed with, you know, decent health. Would go to like a American Family Care or something like that. But I didn't have a current primary doctor. And even just getting that set up of being able to do that. And so when I did that, had this primary doctor that says, you know, you're getting that age where you need to get a colonoscopy. And with that, you know, the old age used to be 50 years old. And they had changed it recently to 45 because they're seeing, you know, more and more events take place like this. But even still, they were just like, you know, you'll be fine. Like, all your blood work's good. It's just formality. And actually did some other testing before that, and it came back abnormal.
Wow.
And even when the abnormal testing, they're like, man, it's probably fine, you know, but let's schedule you and get an actual colonoscopy. You know, obviously, you know, still on edge about that because I'd never had one before, didn't know how big a deal that was, what, you know, how bad you felt from it, or the prep I'd always heard was terrible and all that. None of that was that bad. But I never will forget, I'm coming out of the anesthesia from the colonoscopy. My wife's in there with me. Of course, you know, when I'm coming to, the doctor comes in and, you know, still a little groggy, but he's like, there is some concern. We found a polyp, which, you know, if anybody, you know, has had a colonoscopy or knows somebody, you know, it's not uncommon to have polyps. Like most people, in fact, they even told me, don't panic if they come tell you got 6 or 8 or whatever.
Yeah.
I had one and they were concerned about the size of it. Said that normally they like to see them 1 centimeter or less. Mine was 2 centimeters, but, you know, so this is a help sometimes, but also a detriment. I'm a fix it type person. So I'm like, to the doctor, I said, okay, I remember asking him, even coming out of the anesthesia, worst case scenario, what are we dealing with here? And he's like, well, let's don't go there quite yet, but we're going to send it off for testing, all of this stuff. And man, you know, the waiting, I mean, that was just maddening. I mean, maddening. Because, you know, they've thrown the word cancer out, which is,
you think, can you put a rush on that?
Yeah.
You know,
and in that scenario too, like, I mean, that is probably the scariest word anybody's ever spoken over my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys know this. I think I've even shared it on the podcast, but if not, great time to do it. We got the exciting news just right before that Jamie and I are about to be grandparents for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, daughter Morgan, having a little baby girl, and got to see the 4D sonogram the other day. So I'm already in love. Already was, but
and the baby smiled at you.
Yeah, baby smiling.
How about that technology?
Yeah, you know? Even a little peace sign at one
it
point.
It gave you a peace sign.
Yeah. It's better than the other, you know, signs that, you know, she could have given, but you know, they were messing with her and stuff, doing that ultrasound. But you know, we'd just gotten that news, and so you're talking about from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, and the immediate thoughts is like, you know, my God, like, I'm not even going to get to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jamie and I, we started our parenting journey early, and always had talked we were going to get to be young grandparents, and that was even honestly part of the reason I got my health in order. Was like, I don't want to be a granddad that can't, you know, like, play with my grandkids and go out and throw the ball and whatever. And I was heading that way. And to get that news and just be like, man, like, I don't even know, like, you know, what the future holds for me now. And it's like, I'm a business owner and I'm a pastor and, you know, I've got, you know, these people counting on me. And that was the real mind trip of it all. I'm not going to say personally I wasn't scared, but it was so much more of the people around me that I was worried about. It's like, how is Jamie going to, you know, cope with this?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, we've always had the thing, like, if something happens to one of us, you know, and we're young, obviously, you know, remarrying down the road is fine. My joke with Jamie's always been, just don't bring the guy to the funeral, you know, like, let me rest, let me rest for a little bit. And then, you know, we got issues if that happens. But, you know, just thinking of those thoughts of, like, you know, I just don't want, like, a grandchild, like, having to be a story.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, so fast forward, you know, I get the call, and I was just telling Stephen, we talked about this just a little bit earlier, was kind of rehashing some of this. I said, I will never forget. I can tell you where I was sitting, what was going on, and you get the phone call that we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
I mean, like, one time they tried to even send some results on a portal, and I couldn't get the portal to load. And it was like a mad dash.
Which
like
happened
calling,
on a Sunday morning.
Yes.
Right before you're getting up to
yes,
speak.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm calling tech support, and I'm like, hey. And it wound up being some, like, a bill or something. Like, hey, it, by the way, we don't know if you have cancer, but you owe us this much money.
We don't know if you have cancer, yeah. but we do know.
Yeah. We do know.
You already owe us yeah. money.
Yeah. You can extend your car insurance.
Yeah, yeah. There's been plenty of the bills that have come from it. I will say that cancer is an expensive business, even with insurance. But
doctors are sadists.
Yeah, I get that call though. Sitting,
not really. Just kidding.
Sitting in my office, and when the number comes through, I know it's the hospital. Like I had the number memorized at that point. And I said, "Mr. Akins, we hate to." And as soon as he said, "We hate to," I was like, I got up from my office, people were around, and I walked out, and one of our little side areas here at work, and just he's like, "It's cancer," and I just was in such a fog.
Yeah,
like it was like, you know, it's funny to think about it in this way now, but it's like, honestly, it felt like the Peanuts principle.
Yeah,
you know, the walk, like you couldn't, like I couldn't comprehend, I couldn't make sense of it. I was like physically shaking, because I'd kind of convinced myself, like, you know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah,
you know, like I'm not going to have this, and God's going to see me through it, and all of those things. And then it's you know, I immediately, you know, hey, I need to patch my wife in if you're fine with that. So I have to tell her. In a quick, hey, you know, like I got no other way to say it. It's cancer, and I've got the doctor on the phone, and just, man, the conversations Jamie and I had after, and just like times that we would just sit and wouldn't be able to say anything, you know, and just cry. And I'm not ashamed to say that. I mean, it's just a total mind trip of what life is going to look like from this point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because by that point, they're already saying, you know, I mean, it's that one call, hey, you've got cancer, and then the next 10 bullet points are here are the next steps, boom, 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 yeah. Surgery, we need to line this up, and you need to, I'm going to send you to this surgeon, and I mean, it's just all these decisions you have to make right off the bat.
Yeah.
And there's a sense of urgency, like we need to get right. this done and get this taken care of before it becomes something else.
Right.
The PSA, though, on the screening, I'll say this and turn it back if you've got any more questions on or anything, or we can get into the fear and the worry and anxiety from it for sure. But the doctor that day said that if this had been the typical 5 more years, and this was before he even knew it was cancer.
Yeah.
He told me that day when they were concerned about it, he said, you need to go kiss your doctor. He said, another 5 years, this is a whole different ball game.
Wow.
So... you go from that, and I just remember, you know, I'd prepped, you know, of course you're starving, you know, you've had a full day where you haven't eaten.
Yeah.
Later into that day, and I remember us, Jamie and I going, and we went and got breakfast, and just not even really, like I was starving, but I'd not really even been able to eat my food, like cancer, like right. wow, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely a whirlwind.
Well, I came up to you Sunday, and I told you that I was going to tell you something.
Yeah.
That in regards to, that's related to when you called me and told me that you had it.
Yeah.
So you called me that day. I was at work, and I could tell you were obviously upset.
Yeah.
You said, man. I could tell, like you were saying, the doctor, I could tell in your voice. Because we were waiting. I mean, me and Steve was texting you almost every day going, what the hell, man? Yeah. Why can't he tell you?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's frustrating. And you called me that day and you said, man, you know, it's big C, cancer. And so here's my thing. Like, whenever, you know, you're supposed to pray for people. Right. Like as believers, we're supposed to just pray for them. We hear that all we can do is pray for them. Can I just tell you, I don't know how the hell to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like when somebody says, we need to pray for that. We need to pray for Iran. Mm-hmm. We need to pray for our president. What do I say?
Right.
Lord, help the president. Mm-hmm. You think God, I mean, God's up there with a ledger going, oh, Jesse, pray, help, yeah. help. Okay. Oh, I yeah. forgot about him, Jesse. Right. Thank you, Jesse, for reminding mm-hmm. me to help the president.
Right.
That's where my mind goes. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. No. Sure. I'm just trying to tell you how that works for me.
It feels yeah. like you got to, okay, so if it's for my friend, I need to pray three times extra.
Right.
You know, I need to earn and create this. And then it's kind of a sick thing that you don't realize yeah. you're doing.
Well, and you forget to pray. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that I wasn't thinking about you constantly, right. but then I forget, oh, crap, I didn't. Oh, man, I hope I didn't
yeah.
thwart the process here. Right. You right. know, so I'm upset, obviously, and I'm pacing at work. And I went to this area where I work at a high school, mm-hmm. And I'm a maintenance guy at a high school. Anyway, I don't want to talk about where I work, but I went to this area where no one is, and lights are kind of off. I mean, I can see where I'm going and stuff. And
sounds like the bathroom.
No, it's we have a.
I'm just kidding.
It's a very large school, so there's part of it that's not being used all the time. So I went to that area and I just paced, mm-hmm. and so I started asking God. And I was like, God, I know I should pray for Keith right now, but to be honest, Lord, I have no idea what to even say to you. I'm a little mad mm-hmm. that this is happening. Like, why could you not let this not be this way? Like, I'm a little pissed off that he's about to be a granddad, and then you dump this in his lap, mm-hmm. you know. And so I really just wept, walked. And me and God had that conversation over and over again. And I finally got quiet and I listened. And God said to me, remember and be thankful. Mm. That's what God said to me. Remember and be thankful. Mm. And so I went back through my mind and I thought about all the shenanigans that we've gotten into, mm-hmm. all of the hunting trips, all of the ministry things. Mm. And I remember Sunday we said anxiety. You need to say more about that in a second. Mm-hmm. But anxiety and thankfulness operate in the same part of the brain. I'm going to let you explain that because I'm going to screw that up. Mm-hmm. But as I went through those things, joy started springing up. Mm. Now, I know that's easier for me because I'm not the one with cancer in my body.
Yeah. Mm.
But it was this miraculous moment as I went through each thing, and I cried and I laughed, and me and God had this long conversation. And I hate to admit it, I didn't do any work that afternoon.
Yeah. Mm.
Me and God walked, and I went through, oh, God, I remember that time. Lord, thank you for that moment. Thank you for that story. Thank you for that drive. Thank you for that hunting trip. Thank you for that ministry trip. Oh, God, I remember that, man. Oh. And I started just going through and thinking in my mind, and I just spent the afternoon being thankful for my friend. Mm-hmm. And
that's amazing.
I've never done that before. I've never had that. And this is before we started having these conversations about anxiety and mm-hmm. how thankfulness. And I want you to say more about that. But like that day, I mean, I went home and I was still heavy. It was still heavy. And I wanted to call you, but I thought, man, he's got all these people calling him right now. And I think you and I talked maybe that afternoon, mm-hmm. Stephen. And, like, it was just such a beautiful moment for me. And I know you're upside down at that point.
Yeah.
Which that's one reason I didn't want to tell you any time close to that. Because I didn't want to be like, man, hey, man, though. Like, I know your life sucks right now. Yeah. But me and God had this moment, you know.
Yeah.
But it was almost prophetic to where we are now. Because mm-hmm. we're going to get into that here. About walking through anxiety and fear, because we have all dealt with a large amount of anxiety and fear outside of mortal fears,
yeah,
like death kind of fears. You and I have talked through. We both have owned our own business. You own a car business, mm-hmm. and I owned a painting business for 5 or 6 years. And me and you have had many conversations about that. You and I have had conversations, Stephen. Have I? Have I? you and I have had those conversations about work and about how to navigate the challenges and how to invite God in to the struggle and stuff. And just this, the weight of anxiety, especially, and, you know, with that, but especially when you're dealing with the big C.
You know,
it's like, God, it's but God is faithful and can be faithful and wants to be faithful and is faithful even in that.
Yeah.
And anyway, I wanted to that was one thing I want to share. But
that's beautiful, man.
Say more about this, other stuff.
And I will. I want to say this, that
I feel like I'm talking really loud. Am I talking really loud?
I don't hear it.
No. Okay.
But the idea from that moment, you know, you find out, and it's like, then the course, you know, set, like surgery's going to happen. And the hope all along was that we were only dealing with that one spot. I've joked before, like I had to go and do a scan where they scanned like my whole, you know, like pelvis area and making sure it hadn't spread. And I said, you know, man, if you want to catch up on your prayer life, like lay in one of those tubes, you know, where they don't know the answers. But even that, and I'll say the whole process, like that season, even up till now, I had points where I had probably never been angrier at God, and then yet never as close to God, because faith was all I had.
Right.
And I wrapped my mind around early, and I teach this all the time, and you guys know it. We've, you know, been in prison environments where we've taught, you know, this kind of stuff and living, you know, from relationship over religion. But that I knew God didn't cause cancer. He didn't cause it for Marshall. He didn't cause it for me. And I'd say this to anybody listening, whether your fear, worry, and anxiety is coming from cancer or from, you know, losing your job or, you know, the bank account or a relationship that's gone defunct, whatever it is, we all struggle with fear, you know, worry, and anxiety. But I believe that God doesn't cause those bad things. We have to wrap our mind around He is sovereign and it's under His authority. But if we want to know what God wants for us, He wanted the garden. Mm. He wanted page one of your Bible, cool afternoon walks, intimacy, unhindered by sin, sickness, death, any of the things that choosing our own way brought.
Right.
So sin in a broken world brought cancer. Cancer was never on our radar. He's in the process right now, the Bible says, of making all things new, and yes, it will be no more. You know, I can't even imagine the day, I've got chills, where the temptation to sin is even vanquished. Mm-hmm. Like, we won't even be tempted.
Yes.
And so I want to say that if you're out there and you're going through something, my belief is that a loving God did not cause what you're dealing with right now.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
He will walk through it with you, but He did not cause it. And so that was very huge to remember as well on my end, to go back to that. You know, it's easy to stand up with a mic and teach when everything's going rosy.
Yeah.
But I felt like, and I may be wrong, I felt like I did some of my better teaching as of late, when I knew that I had cancer and was clinging so hard to faith that it was like, it was the most vulnerable and heartfelt teaching I felt like I had done in a while, where maybe it kind of become a little monotonous and just prepping the material, you know, and teaching it from a maybe a head space and not a heart space. But I have to say this, the day that things really, I won't say it wasn't the last time I had a fearful thought, because it wasn't. Fear and anxiety was present throughout. But the day that my sister actually put together and did that, where those that were at church that day, she reached out to a few people and put together this surprise deal for me, where we're done with church at Church of Southside, you know, where we meet out there. And I remember Jamie saying, we've got to go by the building. I remember even being a little aggravated. I was like, man, I'm ready to go home. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm tired. Just the emotions, even, you know, just you know, the people that knew, not everybody knew at that point.
Yeah.
We'd kept that under wraps for a little while, but the people that knew, you know, you're asked a million times how you're doing, and it's great. You're so happy to know that people care, but yeah, you're retelling the story all the time.
Yeah.
And, we were at that, and I have to give a shout out to the first weekend that I found out. We're blessed in that our daughter is married to a guy that we love that is more like a son than a son-in-law. His parents, their family is family to us.
Mm-hmm.
Ned's a good friend of mine. That's my son-in-law's dad. He is a prostate cancer survivor, and it's no coincidence. It was turkey hunting season. We turkey hunt together, and just the wisdom, the shoulder, you know, almost literally to cry on, and things that he was telling me that I would be feeling that he felt in the beginning, and just that, you know, process of what it would take. And that was invaluable. And then coming off of that to that Sunday, my sister setting that up. So we show up to the surprise at the building. I think we're just dropping something off. And I was like, you know, man, there's a lot of cars, you know, here.
Yeah.
And I immediately thought, well, our building's attached to this little tax business that was next door. And I thought, well, man, they must be running like a special or something today. You know, got a lot of people here, tax on a Sunday. I was like, well, it is getting close to tax day. And so I'm just thinking that. And then I look and I start picking out this vehicle. And then I see, man, that's my daughter's vehicle over there, I think. I was like, man, these jokers. And so I walk in and there are, I don't know, 40, 50 people.
It was pretty packed.
That felt probably as most like the kingdom of God as I've ever felt.
Mm-hmm.
Because I walked in the room, and it's funny you mentioned the Red Sea. It was almost like everybody was huddled up. But when I walked in, and it's not that I was like, oh, here's, you know, the guy of the hour or whatever. But, I mean, everybody was gathered there to support me.
Well, you were the guy of the hour, I want to say.
I mean that, like, not that I'm of some great importance or whatever, yeah. But it was like the look.
You felt seen.
The look on people's faces. The only thing akin I can do, and this is another one that we'll definitely do a podcast on this one day. I still don't know that I'm able to process this one, but when I walked my daughter down the aisle at her wedding day and seeing everyone turn, and it's like as I walked with my daughter, I mean, if you could see this podcast, I've got literal chills, but I would see this person. I was like, oh, man, that's a person that, you know, was involved in Morgan's life when she was, you know, in preschool. And this was a, you know, there's my buddy from high school, and there's, you know, and it's all these people. And it was like all these people coming together for this one event. And then it was the same kind of thing. I walked in the building. It's all these people I love deeply. Like everybody there I love deeply. There was not a person there that I was like, eh, why did they get the invite, you know? and it was so thrown together. Like everybody couldn't be invited in that moment. But it's like the people that were there, it's like, I know damn well, like, these people have my back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that got me the most was sweet little Tegan Crow. My sister had wine, like a nice bottle of wine, like we did, you know, communion. And I remember after, just Tegan was standing by my side, and she was a little emotional and stuff. And I remember just picking her up and hugging her. And I remember just whispering in her ear, I say, it's going to be okay. And I needed to hear that probably more than she did. And it was like at that moment, and there were several moments through that, that it was like, okay, it's going to be okay. Like we've got today, you know, we've got today. And, you know, the great rest of the story, the great news of the story before we get to the fear and anxiety part is, you know, had the surgery May 29th. And again, we're sitting here in August. I'm back 100%, released 100% to normal life. Surgery went well. They took out 6 inches of my colon. There were no other spots. Because of that, they took the affected area out and gave a little buffer with more chance of it never coming back.
Do you want me to share my theory on how they took your colon out?
Yes, I would love to. Is this the hard hat scenario? Yeah. Yeah, please do.
Gotta just say,
this goofball told me this right before surgery.
Right before surgery, he comes up, and I said, "I don't know if I can do this."
I already know this is gonna be ridiculous.
Let's go.
So I'm trying to be serious. You know, we got into a howl.
Like he told me he loved me and very serious, and if I never see you again, and also this.
Yeah. So
we're like, how are they going to do this? You know, and he's saying, well, the doctor says, and I said, you know, they're going to, it's very uninvasive. Is that the right word?
Something like that.
Yeah, but they, it's kind of a deal. Yeah. I said, well, look, now, they, you know, they're not going to tell you this. They're not going to talk about this. But the government has actually developed these tiny people through genetic engineering. They've developed these tiny little people. And they have taught them with tiny little instruments how to climb up into you.
This is a secret society.
And, yes. And extract the affected area. Yeah. And then they, if I wish you could see me, you can shimmy down. And I told Keith, I said, so you're going to wake up out of the fog. And I said, that guy's going to be sitting on your chest and he's going to give you the old.
Everything's good, sir.
Everything's good. And he's going to scamper off. Yeah. And you're going to think you were dreaming.
He's going to give you that little Maverick and Top Gun, like, yeah. All clear.
I'm thinking more Happy Gilmore dream.
Yeah.
Is what
find
I'm
your happy play.
Is well, what I'm I'll tell you this. Tricycle, the, but I'm the, not
drugs,
go there.
The drugs they had me on, I think I woke up seeing the little men. So yeah.
There you go.
All
so
works. They were good. But, to you. Yeah, that worked. Everything's good. Surgery back went to, well. Yeah, I will say, do not recommend the surgery if you got to have it. One of the most painful things, you don't realize what you use your core for.
Yeah.
I remember the next day they let me get up and kind of, you know, go through a routine and try to walk some. Brushing my teeth hurt, you know, even moving your core a little. But so, again, I'll say whether it's cancer, whether it's something more serious than that, whether it's, you know, anything that's causing fear and anxiety. We talked about it Sunday, and we stumbled up on this great study. It's a guy by the name of Dr. Dan Baker, and he did a neurology study that shows not that you would never deal with anxiety again. I mean, it's a reoccurring thing, but in the process of being grateful, when you're being grateful, when you are being thankful, it is physically impossible to have fear, worry, and anxiety. The same part of the brain controls both. And so what we did Sunday, and you guys know this, the listeners, you know, very diverse crowd at our church, was really surprised with the audience participation part that we asked for Sunday. We never do that, but we passed out index cards and said, if you feel led to write one thing you're thankful for right now, not like if this happens, then I'll be thankful, or if this comes together, but like right now at this moment, write it down on a card. I'm going to read it, you know, later you can put your name on it or not, whatever you prefer. And the whole point of that was we looked in the passage in Philippians where it's, you know, had several people send that to me throughout. All the people that sent verses, prayers, songs. I mean, I had a little cancer, you know, basically like playlist going on that just were on repeat every day that God just ministered to my heart. In fact, they all made it to the church at Southside playlist. You know, eventually we've got those going on out there. But as we were looking at those and reading those, the verse that was constantly sent to me is about not being anxious about anything, but in prayer and supplication, you know. So we talked about that Sunday, and we closed with just reading. I mean, I bet we probably had a stack of 50 or 60 of those cards.
Mm-hmm.
We probably read 20 of them. Was like, hey, I'm not going to read all these.
Right.
It was so moving to read that most of them said, I'm just thankful to be alive today.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for life. And it's so right there, we did everybody, we got them to do the old pulse check, you know, check your pulse.
Right.
And it's like, if you couldn't write anything down, there's a start, right? Yeah. Like you're in the game, you're in the fight today. And so just when those thoughts, and I tried it the week before, you know, before I taught on it, I'd read it, you know, in a book. But as I was thinking about that, I said, I want to practice this week and be able to tell our folks like, hey, I've tried this. And so I've had some anxious thoughts come up. And every time I did, it's like, man, God, I'm so thankful for my family. I'm thankful that, you know, the cancer's gone. I'm thankful that, you know, I've got breath in my lungs right now. I'm thankful that it's a pretty day today. And like, you know, there's no rain and it's a beautiful day. And it was like the anxiousness disappeared.
Right.
And so I've had several people that we've talked to about that, either out there or in separate conversations, that have reached out to me. It's like, man, it works.
Yeah.
And so I just challenge you, if you're feeling fear, which, God, in our world, it's constant. Like, bad news is at our fingertips every moment that we carry our phone around, breaking news, you know. The heartache of the world, we've talked about that, is that we're not made to carry all of that. And so it really becomes this moment where you have to pray over those things and consecrate that grief and just, man, just stop and be thankful. It works, because mm-hmm. no matter how bad your situation is right now, I promise you got something you can be thankful
for. Yeah, yeah. Well, and this is what I learned. And I wrote this down because I think this is important for me to understand. Two things. One, when you enter into the act of being thankful for something when you're anxious, like what you were just saying, mm-hmm. That's a choice that you make. It doesn't feel natural. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pieces to this walk of faith, this journey of faith with God, that does not feel natural at first.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes there's things there's practices that you have to do, worship, you know, prayer, fasting, all those things that are not going to feel natural. But see, that's what trips human beings up. We think that, well, I'm not thankful about for anything, so we blow that off. I'm not in a mood to be thankful. I'm not in a mood to do this or do that.
Yeah.
But there are things like that that you have to make the choice to do. Because the reality is that you, like you said, we all have something that we could express gratitude for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're frustrated with your job, rather than, you know, get mad at God and go into a bitch session, which mm-hmm. we've all done mm-hmm. with God, I've done that. Like, just like, God, why am I going through? Why do I have to go to this every day and do this every day? If you stop and you say, and this sounds like mom telling you, you know, just be thankful. But if you stop and you say, okay, God, so if I didn't have that job, I wouldn't have been able to go on that vacation a few mm-hmm. weeks ago.
Right.
And I wouldn't have had that moment. And I wouldn't have been able to sit down at that restaurant and have that meal over a table with my wife. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been able to throw a football on that beach with my kid. I wouldn't have been able to have that car to drive to that place mm-hmm. to take my son fishing or whatever. And you start to go, and there's something, it's like a flower that kind of mm-hmm. starts to open up.
Yeah.
And starts to receive sunlight and water and nutrients. Mm-hmm. There's some, I'm telling you, and it's a choice you make.
Yeah.
I would even say having faith in God is a choice. Mm-hmm. It's not an emotion.
Yeah,
it's choosing to go, you know what? No. God has. There's an Andrew Peterson song. I can't remember the exact lyrics, but he says I've seen too much. Mm. Is the idea of the song? I've seen too much. I can't doubt at this point.
Yeah.
God has come through too many times.
Yeah,
I can't doubt at this point. You know, so it's a choice. You know, you were about to say something. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I like the metaphor or analogy, whichever one of those is, about the what you were saying with the seed and planting it. Because if you've ever participated in trying to plant and grow something, I mean, it's kind of anticlimactic. You know, it's not the most intense, hey, you got results the next day type thing. You have to kind of submit to the process. You right. got to go out there and you got to water some dirt.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And nothing happens.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of funny when we're all talking about this, you know, submitting to this process of, you know, because when you hear, you know, like, first thing I hear there's a friend I used to joke about with this at work is, you know, we'd be going into that session of complaining about your job and go, well, at least I got a job. Yeah, and be grateful. Yeah, and you hear that, I think, is a lot of times of, for me, I hear that is, you ungrateful little, you know, and that's the road that we know leads to nowhere.
Right.
What I found, and I think in each of our stories, when we were talking about how joy kind of eked in the way, was, when I had a guy say, I didn't have a friend like that.
Yeah.
When you reached out in that moment of, hey, why is this happening with Keith? Why is this happening? What did he say? Remember and
be thankful.
And be thankful.
Yeah.
And you started recounting and how it slowly came in there.
Yeah.
Right back with your daughter. Yeah. I mean, going through that, seeing all those things, you had to kind of submit to it, and it was an emotional moment.
Oh,
but
man.
When you did, and you saw her preschool teacher, you saw so-and-so that showed up in your life that day, and I think that's what I had to be. That was my first step in towards of handling grief and handling everything was, hey, man, you had a great friend, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a friend that, I mean, he's friend. Everybody says that guy was their best friend, but he was your best friend.
Yeah.
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 And you were able to experience that a lot of people we take for granted. They really don't. And that's not meant to be, I mean, it's like you said, you hear it in that voice of, why are you complaining?
Yeah.
And it's not you gotta turn a little bit and look at it differently. Is I'm not complaining. I'm just observing something that's good.
Yeah.
And we don't do that enough.
Well, and it's kind of like you hear, I said this to you. I think I said this to you Sunday. It was like, you know, when you say you're thankful for something, when you say you should be thankful, it's kind of like your mom tells you, like you're at a restaurant and the lady brings you a drink.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Lady brings you a drink to fill your drink or whatever. And you're like, and your mom's like, you better say thank you.
Yeah.
And it's more for the waitress than it is for you.
Mm-hmm. But
in
this
case, and for your mom.
Yeah.
And for, in this case, that's not the way it is. God is, wants us to walk that path of gratitude for us.
To slow down.
To slow down, take stock, remember, oh, man, if these things wouldn't have happened, if I wouldn't have, like, you know, look, I'll say it, full transparency. You know, you guys know this. I'm a hardcore, not hardcore music, but hardcore songwriter, music. I love music. I love creating music. I love playing music with my band. And I would love to be doing that for a living. I would love to go play somewhere and have thousands of people show up. But you know, one of the things that I am super thankful for, and I can honestly say this, 25 years I've been praying, like, God, open a door. Like, make, you know, if that would have happened the first time I asked God for that to happen, my life, I can honestly tell you, my life would be wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
It would be absolutely wrecked because it's this meandering path that I have been on, that we are on, that narrow path, you know, opposite of the wide way, you know, that narrow path that has brought me restoration. It's brought me community that I didn't know I needed, that I don't think I could live without now. It's brought me a wife. I didn't want to get married.
Yeah.
What? 17 years I've been married. 17 years ago, or 18 years ago, more 19 years ago. I didn't. I wanted a girlfriend.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to get married. I didn't want kids. And I can't imagine a better life than having two kids and a wife that I love dearly that I would give my life for.
Yeah.
You know. So it's like, I don't know. You just think about those things, and it's like, if God hadn't have done it this way, where would I be, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it's awesome. You know.
Well, I know we're going to be wrapping up soon. Can I tell y'all some gifts that I feel like this whole deal brought me, though?
Yes, please.
I mean, that's, you know, when you look back on a traumatic situation, it's like you always try to look for the good, you know. And I can definitely say my faith has never been stronger. Like, I had to rely so much, and I'm still not at a place where I can say, like, God, thank you that I had this, you know, because I still, if I could have rewound and not had to go through all I went through. But a friend of Birmingham, folks know her for sure, but Roxanne, that had the radio show, Roxanne and Ace, they've got a podcast now and went on their show a few times, messaged her husband, cancer survivor, and she gave me this little bit of nugget that first weekend, and it rang so true. Was that going through cancer, beating it, surviving through it, whatever, however you want to call it. And I feel even kind of weird saying that because I didn't even have to do chemo. Like, I made it, you know, so early enough, but, you know, it was still an ordeal and toughest thing I'd been through. But she said that the stuff that bothered you before cancer it's just not really going to bother you anymore. Mm. And man, that's been awesome. So true.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not that big a deal. You know, the trivial stuff. And the last one, I was trying to think of something else. I never will forget this feeling of kind of almost like as guys, we don't like the feeling of helplessness, you know, mm. like the getting in and out of the hospital bed and the trying to walk down, like,
yeah.
all right, we want you to walk, you know, two doors down, you know, today. And it's like, I'm 45 years old. I can, you know, walk this whole hospital if I want to. And it's like, I couldn't, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
You know, if you follow me on anything or you guys have seen it, like I was walking like a 100-year-old man.
Yeah.
But, when I had 3 nights in the hospital and then I had to recover and, you know, just basically sit in my recliner for a few days too before I could even really get up and move. Mm. Jamie was going out and, you know, it was like, I think I can get out of the house for a little bit. And I went to the grocery store down the house. And I mean, I am moving at a snail's pace. But if you look at me, I'm in, you know, gym shorts, you know, tennis shoes, a t-shirt. Like, my wounds are covered.
Yeah.
You can't see anything. And I knew, like, I could just feel the looks in the grocery store. Like, man, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm, like, yeah. shuffling down the aisle, like, you know, like, really, like, I'm 90 years old. And it just brought me this perspective of, like, man, like, on the outside, you know, people probably look at me and think, yeah, well, what's this guy's deal?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sitting here with a sign, you know, walking down, hey, I just had cancer, whatever.
I need my Frosted Flakes. Get out of the way, man.
Yeah, get out of the way. I really did feel that, but it really did teach me the perspective of you just don't, anybody we encounter, you just don't know what right. they're going through. Yeah. And just that little extra kindness, you know, and patience with people. Mm-hmm. Like I've, fortunately that hasn't worn off yet. I keep waiting for the day that, you know, I'm stubborn, you know, it does. Yeah. And I forget and have to be reminded of that. But that's been a good gift of just don't take things at face value when you run into somebody and it may not even be something physical, you know, yeah. they may be, you know, dying on the inside, yeah. you know, mentally, emotionally. And I mean, you may be encountering somebody, I mean, to think of all the people like a Robin Williams that, you know, was the life of anybody he was around and laughing and smiling and, you know, Chris Cornell, that's this talented musician and, right. you know, these guys have these tragic ends to their life and was just fighting battles nobody knew.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
And so it definitely brought me that perspective of just, really trying to be patient with people and you never know what somebody's dealing with. So tough stuff, but man, hopefully folks out there, it's been a help as they've got to listen. So
right.
Stephen, man, thanks for being with us, dude.
Yeah, man.
Well, I'm grateful for the time here and looking forward to some other opportunities to hang out with you guys.
Well, good. And we, you know, you're going to hear Stephen on
yeah.
As much as we can get him out here. And these are conversations that we've had, these yeah. kind of conversations, sitting by a fire, riding down the road, sitting in a Mexican restaurant. And we want to just tell everybody out there, look, you know, if you found this encouraging, if you found this, you know, slightly entertaining at some of our stupid things we say or whatever, man, share this with somebody. Like, mm-hmm. there's people out there who are struggling. It would help us in terms of getting the word out because we're doing this because we need more of this in the world. We need more of these kind of conversations where people can be honest and be candid about struggle, about faith, about where we are with God. There's so many people out there just giving up. Yeah. I mean, do you realize that this generation right here, we're seeing, like, statistically, we're seeing more people depart faith, mm-hmm. leaving the church. They're leaving in droves right now. Mm-hmm. Like, we are at a pivotal point at this point in time, because people are just bailing on it. Because
yeah.
for a lot of people, it just don't work anymore. Like, yeah. this polished thing that we you know, show up and just try and put on a smile and just, you know, fake it till you make it kind of reality.
Yeah.
It don't work.
But it that's does the argument. Not work,
it don't
man.
Work, and that's why nobody wants to do it, is because right. it's true. Yeah. It don't work. But what does work is what we're discovered, yeah. and I think that we've all encountered as we've been navigating through these conversations, is like, talk about it in a real way, find the opportunity to do it. It's okay if it comes out sounding weird. It's right. not.
Yeah.
Most right. people you're not, have had that conversation.
You're not alone. I mean, yeah. we shared that Sunday, even the statistics of right now, self-help books on anxiety are up 25 to 30% in sales.
Right.
And I think we shared the figure that 7 million Americans right now, and that's just in America, are on some kind of anti-anxiety.
Yeah.
And that's just the ones that are diagnosed.
I would also say too, if you're listening, please go to the Church at Southside Facebook page, website. Right. Listen to Sunday's talk that Keith gave on anxiety. I mean, it's so helpful. I mean, all of your talks are so helpful, but it's like that one right now for our point in time, super helpful.
We can add that in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Add it in the show notes. But we want to, man, if you're listening, we are super grateful to you. Speaking of being grateful, we're super grateful that you would take time out of your schedule to listen. And, it's, again, share this, man, like, cause this is not just about trying to get a bunch of followers on Facebook or trying to get a bunch of followers on a podcast, but this is about, man, spreading the kind of journey that we've all found enriching, where you could, a place where you can be, you can, it's safe enough for you to be honest, and to, I mean, you know, talking about being polished, this is as polished as we get.
Yeah,
the three of us, we've had some serious, like, you know, some conversations that would make
X-ray.
A sailor blush.
Yeah, so, let's be honest.
But again, you know, this is episode 2, and we are super grateful for everybody listening. And
not X-rated, but NC-17. I'd say.
Yeah, there you go.
I had to backpedal a little bit.
There you go.
All right, we'll see you next time, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, guys. Love y'all. Bye.